welcome back to another episode of The Few. If you enjoyed last week's episode, make sure you subscribe, leave a review. Let's keep pumping the tires on this thing because we are getting some incredible guests onto the show and I'm having an absolute ball. Today, bringing the two worlds together, the world of the fighter pilot and the world of psychedelic medication. Obviously, parallels that you may not normally draw. The guest we have today was a former U.S. Navy fighter pilot, flew the same airplane I flew, the F-18, so solid dude. And graduated Top Gun course, did the full Maverick thing after 15 years, left. And then, like many of us, made that transition and found that a little bit of an adventure. So, hey, let's make you welcome.
Welcome to The Few Podcast.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
So you want to become one of the few.
You can't skip steps. You have to put one foot in front of the other. Things take time.
I have a dream.
Hear inspiring stories from the few and learn what it takes to turn your dream into reality.
Don't be afraid to dream big. But remember, dreams without goals are just dreams.
This is The Few with Boo.
Matthew Buckley, or Wiz, thanks for coming on The Few, man. I'm super appreciative of you giving us this time today.
You bet, Boo. Thanks for having me, my brother. It's always good to hang with a fellow Hornet bro.
Yeah. Hey, man, I mean, you know, psychedelics and flying fighters at the time, probably two mutually exclusive experiences, right? So let's get to the crux of this. How did your pathway as a fighter pilot, where there is no drugs, we are drug tested, everything's by the book, highly standardized, fully structured world, to embrace psychedelics as a form of therapy for, you know, people that are maybe just struggling a little bit?
Yeah, trust me, it's a journey, right? It starts long before the military. I was raised in South Jersey, South Philadelphia, Irish Catholic family, kind of a lower middle class family, didn't have a ton of money, six kids. I had a brother and four sisters and was always taught service above self, kind of that Irish Catholic John F. Kennedy type of family. And when I was a kid, my brother and my two older sisters were going to college outside of Philadelphia called Villanova University. And I was getting ready to go into high school, freshman year in high school, kind of a tough age for a young man anyway. And my brother and my two sisters were at a fraternity party. And my brother and my one sister, Marilyn, said, hey, Monica, we're heading back to campus. Do you want to ride? She said, no, I'm going to hop in a car with these folks. Well, those folks were drunk, putting five people in a Fiat, blew a stop sign and got hit. And my sister was thrown from the car and broke her neck. And she was killed, 19 years old. I bring that up because that was just an absolute hand grenade in my family as a young kid. I was also sexually abused as a child. And taught service above self. I lived on that Jersey Shore. I loved the beach, loved the ocean, loved fighter jets. So kind of like a Reese's peanut butter cup, I said, you know what? I want to land fighter jets on board an aircraft carrier. So I went into the United States military. I didn't get rid of the childhood trauma. I just kind of, I hid it.
You just bury that down, right? Like that's normally what happens. You just fill it with activity, stay busy, just, which is probably, the military is the perfect place to bury that monster, I'd imagine.
Well, Boo, as an aviator, you know what they teach us to do, to compartmentalize, right? So when I got in the military and they're like, here's how you compartmentalize and you hide stuff so you can succeed on your mission. I'm like, oh, geez, I guess I was doing a good job compartmentalizing all my childhood trauma. Well, in 15 years of fighter aviation, I lost 16 brothers in mishaps. Not one combat loss. Mechanical, weather, stupidity, more weather, more mechanical, more stupidity. So 16 brothers gone. Along the way, three F-18 brothers, suicide. Picture my best friend sitting over there on my hutch, Eric Swenson, Captain Eric Swenson, Swede, Marine Hornet guy, beautiful bride, five kids, put a bolt in his head. So a lot of trauma.
It's not something that people really associate with as well. I had a very close friend when I was in the Royal Air Force, who was the most incredible pilot. He was graduated top of the course. He flew tornadoes. He flew F-16s in the U.S. Air Force. He flew typhoons. He was an absolute hard charger. And then one day just decided enough was enough and also, you know, committed suicide. And it's not something that you really associate in the world of fighter pilots, is it?
Well, I didn't think, right, until all this stuff started happening. As you know, we were taught to compartmentalize, but in fighter aviation, we're also taught what? fly hard, party even harder. Culture of drinking, culture of tonight we drink, tomorrow we die, type of atmosphere. So when you're removed from that mission, or you don't feel like you're hacking up to it, we're our own worst critics, aren't we? Ain't nobody going to out-criticize me. I'll be the first one to beat the shit out of me. So you're right. But take a look at some of the physiological stuff. I remember one of my flight surgeons looking at me. He's like, Wiz, you guys don't want to know what your brain looks like, after 15 years of pulling 7, 8, 9 Gs. You don't want to know what slamming. Imagine sitting in your driveway in your car and a crane lifting you up to the second story, dropping that car in the driveway. That's the effect of a carrier landing, right? It's essentially a car crash. Every catapult shot, you go from 0 to 150 miles an hour in about a second and a half to 2 seconds. The way your brain moves on a catapult and a landing, what's happening to your brain as you're pulling these Gs, as you and I know, Boo, you can fight the jet on the edge of consciousness, right? You can fight in gray. I can feel I'm about to black out. Let me ease off on the G, get some blood back. Oh, there he is, back on the G. So you wouldn't think that, but, and we'll get into our foundation in a little bit, but I started to trauma shame myself. Like, dude, are you kidding me with your trauma? There's guys and gals on the ground, seeing their buddies' heads get blown off. So in fighter aviation and in the culture of the military, we trauma grade, we trauma shame. So I kind of pushed all this stuff down. And then I left fighter aviation.
What did it feel like, though? I mean, what was going on, like, in terms of you realizing that there wasn't something quite right, that you weren't living the dream? Life was starting to feel a bit skewed.
Well, to the outside world, Boo, absolutely nothing. I am a lean, mean fighting machine. Ain't nothing wrong with the Wiz fighter. I could mask. I was wearing about 20 different masks. On the inside, starting to rot to the core, man. Depression, anxiety, booze, some dark nights of the soul. And unfortunately, one of my career choices led me to Wall Street. So you go from the culture of a fighter squadron, where if you don't trust one of those guys or gals with your life, they're gone. They're just not a member of that team anymore. To a Wall Street firm where guys would push their own mother in front of a bus to make a dollar. I mean, it just was, you go from a culture of that to that, and that just kind of, that was some downward pressure even more on my morale meter. So it was pretty brutal. But I was hitting the booze, hitting the drugs, just trying to mask all of these symptoms. And then, God takes care of fools, drunks, and sailors. So in the year 2020, I predicted the COVID market crash to the day. It just didn't get any better than that. But, I run a company called Top Gun Options. I teach people how to trade. And in the span of about 3 to 4 weeks, about $2.5 million in trades, pounding the market into the dirt. Now, in 2020, after just some disgusting trading, I remember my dad, you can't take it with you, son. I'm not one to quote scripture too often, but it'll be easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. So I said, you know what? And you're not a pharaoh. They're not going to put it in your casket, and take it with you. So in 2020, I found out, especially after my brother Swede and 3 other suicides, I started looking into veteran suicide. Turns out, back in 2020, the government number, which we'll talk about, which is a lie, the government number at the time was 17-ish to maybe 22 veterans take their own lives in the United States every day. And that was just, that's obscene. That's literally, and I hate even speaking like this, but God forbid, 22 children were being slaughtered every day in a massacre in our schools. Even the pro-gun nuts would go, bananas. We were having a massacre in the veterans community every day. And when I brief people on those numbers, you can see kind of the color run out of their face. They're like, I didn't know that. I'm like, well, guess what? Uncle Sam doesn't have a press conference and tell you these numbers. And then after, about a year after that, with the Afghanistan withdrawal, I mean, my phone just blew up. Guys are like, dude, why did I go? Why am I missing an arm? Why didn't my buddies dead? 20 years fighting the Taliban to give Afghanistan back to the Taliban. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start a foundation. I'm going to start a foundation to fight veteran suicide. And Boo, I had absolutely no clue what I was going to, how do you stop a veteran from killing themselves? I'm like, what do we do? Buy suits? Do we help them write a resume? Absolutely clueless. But I just wanted to try. I had a little bit of coin that I had no intention of keeping, so I started a foundation. And again, God takes care of fools, drunks, and sailors. Around that time, a buddy of mine's like, hey, there's a group of Navy SEAL veterans and Special Forces guys that go down to Mexico, and they do psychedelic-assisted therapy to heal their traumatic brain injuries and their trauma and their addiction issues. Do you want to go? And I'm like, go to Mexico and do psychedelics with Navy SEALs? Fucking sign me up, man. Yeah. that sounds like a freaking awesome weekend. I had absolutely no idea what I was in for. I don't know if some of your viewers have seen the movie Lone Survivor, you know, with Mark Wahlberg, about Marcus Luttrell. So me, Marcus Luttrell, Jared Taylor, JT, one of the founders of Black Rifle Coffee, another Navy SEAL veteran, and an NFL player, All-American out of Iowa, 8 years in the NFL, suffering from horrific CTE.
Yeah, man.
And we flew into San Diego. We shook hands, met each other for that first time. And we hopped in a car in San Diego. We drove about an hour south into Mexico. Why? Because in San Diego, it's a felony. And an hour away, it's life-saving. So I went down to Mexico with these gents, and I'll give you the cliff notes. It was without a doubt the most spiritual, transformative, life-saving and changing experience in my 52 years at that point. It literally saved and changed my life. We left, you know, Monday hugging each other and crying, and we're best friends to this day. We're kind of a band of brothers. So I got home and I said, this is how I'm going to end veteran suicide.
Was it a structured program or just like Hangover 2?
No. It's a place called The Mission Within. And they had been doing this with Special Forces veterans for a couple of years prior to me showing up. I was one of the first aviators to do it because, as you alluded to, that doesn't go together. Because huge stigma. This is a separate podcast right here, but I had a brief airline career. The morning of September 11th, I was getting ready for my first flight as a pilot for American Airlines. Instead, I raced in my 89 Porsche 911 out to Naval Air Station Fort Worth and ended up briefing with the F-16 guys next door to sit a combat air patrol. I mean, I went from potentially flying in an airliner that day to shooting one down. So I bring that up because guess what I didn't do? Go to the airlines, man. I lost my airline job and all that type of stuff. So I was one of the first aviators to go sit with this medicine. So the initial foundation I had started was called Top Gun Fighter Foundation, you know, big marketing department. So I called it that. And then I got home and I said, you know what? All veterans need access to these life-saving and changing medicines. So I started the No Fallen Heroes Foundation, where we provide healing grants to these veterans, first responders, and their families. Why those two other demographics? A lot of veterans, when they take off that federal uniform, they go to their state or their local town and they throw on a first responder uniform. But when they took that military uniform off, they didn't take the trauma off. And now, as a first responder, they're even adding even more to their trauma. I have a buddy who's a 20-year Marine, and he was down your way. He went to Coral Gables Fire Rescue, and he said, Wiz, my time in the Marines was a joke compared to what I see as a first responder. So I said, you know what? We're going to help veterans, first responders, and then their families. 99.9% of my wife's trauma is Wiz-induced. So they serve too. So I got back, and we started the No Fallen Heroes Foundation, and for the past couple of years, man, we've been saving and changing some lives with these sacred medicines. So that was a very long answer to your short question, but that's how I ended up sitting here today on your podcast, bro.
Hi, it's Boo here. If you're enjoying these episodes of The Few, please show your support by leaving a review. It costs you nothing, and the more reviews we have, the better guests we can reach out and bring onto the show to help you close the gap between what you want and where you are today even faster, and help you on your journey to become one of the few too.
Yeah, but there's layers in that I find fascinating. For example, you know, when you look at business and you look at self-help and self-awareness, and there's a lot of talk around, you've got to define your purpose and go for your purpose and purpose, purpose, purpose. But you talk about your story there about how God finds, you know, fools, drunks. And in Afghanistan, it was murderers, misfits, and missionaries.
Close enough. Yeah.
But your story is that it's the universe has found your pathway for you. I mean, it's not something that any of it really, you're destined to do this or provide this service to humanity.
Yeah. After my sister died, I was done. I was your stereotypical Irish Catholic kid. I was an altar boy, you know, three masses on Sunday. God was a, you know, white dude on a throne with a beard, you know, shoot lightning out of his fingertips. And after my sister died and destroyed my family, and my dad died years later, he died of a broken heart. He was done. I was done. Ain't no God. And then I saw all the stuff in the military. I'm like, what type of God is allowing war and hate and, you know, racism and crime? And I'll tell you, Boo, on this medicine, man, I found my faith again. He never left. I did. And it reconnected me with my faith. So to your point, you know, we're always, hey, what's the mission objective? What are we, you know, trying to accomplish here? So any of the medicine work we do, before we go on any retreat, I treat this deadly serious. It's a combat mission, man. You ain't, hey, I'll meet you in, you know, Colorado to do the medicine. No, 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 no. I mean, we got manuals. You have a guide. You have to come up with your, you know, it's close enough to a mission objective, your intentions. Why am I going to sit with this medicine? We tell people to have at least 5 intentions for the medicine. And then also 5 questions. So you go into this thing. This is a deadly serious operation. We do blood work, EKGs, because some of the medicines can potentially lower your heart rate. We will prepare as much as we physically can. And then 5% is the retreat, is the medication. 95% is when you get home and the integration. Because the Ibogaine that I did literally was a Control-Alt-Delete. It scrubbed everything. So you get a clean piece of paper. Matter of fact, Ibogaine, you know, we had 2 major news stories last week, Washington Post and the New York Times, about Ibogaine. It's an addiction interrupter. What do I mean by that? I was a drinker, and I don't know if you can be a good drinker. I was a bad drinker. Up to 8 months after 1 Ibogaine treatment, I couldn't even look at alcohol. It made me ill. It made me, like, physically ill. 85% of heroin addicts don't even look, can't even say the word heroin, up to 3 years after 1 Ibogaine treatment. So
is that the medication or the freedom to reset your mindset? Is it like a hypnotherapy type of release where you convince yourself, or is that literally a chemical that disrupts a neural pathway?
The answer is all the above. And, you know, one of the SEALs that I went with, he showed me his brain scans from the VA. Dark, black, gray. 3 months after the medicine, his brain scans were white. They were completely clear. And this SEAL also, Wiz, hell man, I was on 15 meds at the VA. 5 to wake up, 5 for lunch, 5 to go to bed. I haven't taken a med in 3 years. So long answer, short question is the answer is both. These medicines, and it's interesting because we in the West are like, hey, look at what we just discovered. Let's test all these things. They've been used for thousands and thousands of years in other cultures. And here we are going, let's put on a lab coat and a beaker. I get it. You know, a lot of people want to learn how these things work. To your point, it is the medicine, but it's also your intention. Whenever we talk about doing medicine work, the 2 big things are set and setting. What's your mindset going into this experience, and what's your setting, your location? 99.9% of the time when somebody's like, oh, I tried, you know, fill in the blank and it was awful, I'm like, let me take a couple guesses, and I'm usually right about it, right? So these things are, we treat with reverence and we treat them with deadly seriousness. And that usually resonates with our veterans, right? They're used to like, hey, give me a manual. What can I expect? You know, what are my objectives and all those type of things? And
well, I don't think people can truly understand from someone who's, for ex-military folks, what it's like to even contemplate. I mean, these folks were involved in the war on drugs, right? These folks were running around stopping the cartels from getting all that gear up here. And for them to, 2 things. 1, there must be a lot of desperation for them to make the leap. And 2, it must be so structured and familiar with a slightly different mission that those 2 create the ability to cross the Rubicon.
Great points, but I'm going to lead with, so you gave me 2, let me give you the 3rd. The 3rd is absolute disillusionment with the government. The definition of a Schedule 1 drug in this country is no therapeutic use at a high risk of addiction. That's a cigarette and that's alcohol. 100% legal. On the scale of harm, they're over on the left side here. Down here on the right is psilocybin. It's the least harmful thing you can do, and it's probably can save and change your life. That's illegal, and alcohol and tobacco are legal. So just a brief history, late 60s. Hey, you young men, go on the other side of the planet with these weapons and kill the yellow man in Vietnam. No, we love those people. Wait a minute, how can you love somebody you never met? Well, we took this stuff. Okay, now that's illegal, and here's your rifle and still go kill those people. So the knee-jerk reaction of the war on drugs is insane. The anti-addiction properties of these medicines and how they can rewire your brain these things should be 1,000% legal, and maybe alcohol and tobacco, which killed people, should maybe be rescheduled. 2024, man, I'm glad we're talking about it. This is the year for all of this stuff. The FDA has given us a date, August 11th. On or before August 11th, the FDA is going to announce that they're going to reschedule MDMA from a felony class one, go to jail, to schedule three, like a ketamine. Elon Musk on CNBC talking about ketamine. Ketamine is a life-saving medicine for veterans and first responders and their families. So long answer to your short point, a lot of the veterans are a little, they're very upset. I mean, hell, you know, man, the VA in the United States is an absolute train wreck. Hey, here's your appointment with your doctor 12 months from now. So when they see the life-saving and changing, and as you know, as a veteran, man, we usually don't do something unless one of us vouches for it, right? So the reason this stuff has really exploded in the veteran space is people hopefully are like, I know Wiz, he's not that much of an idiot, but if this saved and changed his life, maybe I can give it a go. It's a mixture of all those things you mentioned, but also the disillusionment of everything that's going on. And I'll tell you another thing. One of the main reasons I think Uncle Sam used to have a problem with this stuff is because maybe it can turn warriors into peacemakers. Old Wiz, 5 years ago, I would have swam across the Atlantic by now to see how many Russians I could kill. Now I'm like, just throttle back, man. Go to your corners for like a week. Go sit in time out, man. Let's try and figure something out. If you want to keep killing each other, knock yourself out. But it's, you know, I can't even believe I'm saying give peace a chance. Now, don't think I don't remember how to be violent if needed. But I've seen Navy SEAL combat-hardened dudes, you know, Marcus and all these guys who eat barbed wire for breakfast type of thing that have really kind of changed their perspectives on things. Let's try to give peace a chance. And then obviously, God forbid, if that doesn't happen, now you're in a lot of trouble. But these are meat-eating, knuckle-dragging guys and gals that have healed, which is pretty cool. And let me hit on this real quick, because you and I talked about at the beginning, trauma shaming, trauma grading. The other reason I started No Fallen Heroes is because the foundation that I went with was like, well, you know, we just kind of help Navy SEAL veterans, but, you know, since you're a cool guy, well, you can come with us. I was like, hey, man, we need a foundation to help all veterans, because guess what happened? I went and talked to a couple of my female F-18 sisters, and they're like, yeah, man, we'd love to heal our trauma. And I'm like, oh, cool. Here's what we do in our retreats. They're like, yeah, man, it ain't from combat. It's from rape and sexual assault. And I was like, whoa. And they're like, it ain't your fault, clearly. But so as I started digging around in our foundation, some of these women, not even anywhere near the front lines of combat, and they're attacked by their own people. So we've given healing grants to some female veterans who have experienced MST, military sexual trauma, and not to get too into it, but some male MST survivors as well. So our foundation, if you got trauma, don't trauma grade or shame yourself. If something hurts you, I'm here to tell you healing is possible. Don't compare yourself to somebody else's trauma. It's something, you know, as you know, man, you get on an airliner, what's the flight attendant tell you? If we lose pressurization, put the mask on who first?
Yeah.
You.
Self. Yeah.
You put the mask on yourself first. You ain't good to anybody else if you're not. So yeah, I love this stuff, man. And I never thought I'd be on a podcast talking about it. Trust me.
I'm keen to unpack something else here, because obviously for a lot of people, being a fighter pilot, many people externally go, hey, man, you're a successful human being. Like, that's a tough job. You know, it's a small pool of people, and even a smaller pool graduate, you know, Wall Street, setting up your trading businesses. Every one of those is an indicator of success, right? And there are plenty of successful people out there that are hurting. Yeah. And a lot of relationships that go for a long time where there's a lot of pain and a lot of hurt, right? Like, we're pretty good at bearing trauma, really, aren't we, as humans? So what would you
or
say
bad.
To somebody?
we're good at it, but it's bad, but yeah.
So how do you know? I have this concept of normalization theory where wherever you put a human, eventually they'll normalize that environment. Living in Afghanistan, watching families and mothers feed and clothe their children in blown out walls of buildings in -5 degree temperatures. So if trauma and suicide as well is it's obviously a very serious, it's the ultimate escape from trauma, right? But leading up to that, like, what is it that you can tell people, or what is it that people who are successful, how can they kind of make peace with their trauma and do something about it?
So that's all great points. The one thing I'll take exception to is the definition of success, because you're right. Old Wiz would look at being a Top Gun grad, naval aviator, Wall Street executive, fill in the blank, man. I thought that was the definition of success. But I got to be honest with you, Boo, deep inside here under this, the ego of a Wall Street executive and a Navy fighter pilot is a soul, right? To me, God does not make imperfect things. So underneath that 52-year-old shell of trauma, mishaps, suicides, drinking, culture, there's a fire. There's a light in there, man. All of us have light. Even the most evil people on this planet, man, have. It's that ego. It's that separation from, I choose to use the word God, but it's that separation from source. And all those years, all that ego buildup, I knew I was still in there somewhere. But to your point, man, I was chasing that high, wasn't I? Fighter pilot, Top Gun, Wall Street executive, business owner. And I was hollow, but I could still feel that there was something in there, you know? And when you go to do the medicine work, the first time I sat with the medicine, they're like, hey, bring pictures of you as a kid and some other, you know, like your wedding and stuff like that. I'm like, that sounds dumb. Halfway through my Ibogaine experience, I look at this little towhead kid, this blonde-haired kid from Jersey, you know, on the beach, and just looking at the innocent, I'm like, oh my God, look at that. That's me, right? So when I got to dissolve this ego, which, as you know, pretty tough for a fighter pilot, it's doable. When you dissolve that ego, I rediscovered who I truly was. So now, man, my definition of success has nothing to do with all those things you rattled off. It has nothing to do with that. My definition of success is how present I am. Talking to you right now with my beautiful bride, my kids, we're going to Colorado tomorrow for spring break to see our boy. How present I am. And you know this military term, how I put the ladder down to help my brothers and sisters, to help others who are suffering. There is no greater gift than helping your fellow woman or man. If I don't go on one of our retreats, I don't know how many times, Boo, I get a text that says, Wiz, I don't want to kill myself anymore. How do you put a dollar, Matt? You can't. So to your point, man, I've shifted my goalposts of what the definition of success is. And between us ladies, Boo, if I die penniless and having done all this stuff, man, then I succeeded.
When it comes to this sort of treatment and therapy, is it a one-off thing? Is it something that is a regular? Is it, or it's just completely dependent on the individual and the trauma that they're trying to recover from?
Great question, man. I love this question. The answer is all of the above. I know countless veterans that have been one and done. My Ibogaine experience was 12 to 14 hours. It was not fun. It was not pleasant. It was work, man. It wasn't crazy or sad or anything like that. I got to see my sister and my father experience God, but it's not, you're having a blast. I bring that up because a lot of folks are one and done. A lot of folks. And it depends on the medicine. After doing Ibogaine and, you know, getting my ass kicked for 12 to 14 hours, I started researching other medicines. And I'm like, oh, this guy's done ayahuasca 50 times or whatever. I'm like, oh my God, are you insane? Because I was comparing my Ibogaine experience to like other medicines. So each one of these medicines have different healing modalities. For my group, you know, Marcus and JT and some of the other guys, we call it the annual knock the rust off. There's a old me, if I'm built up, ice up on the wings, old Wiz, I'd spiral down and it could get ugly. New Wiz knows that I can go get de-iced. So it just depends. Like I said, this ain't fun. This isn't recreational, the exact opposite of what the government says these things are. But some folks do maybe an annual retreat to knock the rust off. Other people are one and done. I don't know anybody who does any of this frequently, other than ayahuasca, which is a shorter duration, shorter acting thing. Same thing with ketamine. But the heavier medicines, man, most people can be one and done, and which is a good thing. You know, a lot of people are like, dude, I'm good and I'm good. You know, I don't need to. So Congressman Luttrell, so Marcus's brother is Morgan Luttrell. It looks like their mom, Hiccup. They're twins and they're both Navy SEALs. So Morgan did the medicine. Man, that was the best ass kicking of my life. I don't want to do that again. So now he's a U.S. Congressman. So him, Congressman Crenshaw, Congressman Zinke, I've met all these guys on the Hill, are pushing for therapeutic use for veterans with these medicines. But long answer to your short question, it just depends on the person and the trauma and just a whole host of issues. I've done a couple different medicines just because, as you know, to be able to speak to something,
yeah,
you got to do it. I'm never sending a veteran or any of our grant recipients to anywhere I haven't been and I haven't sat with the medicine. So I've done a little bit more just to be able to get my flight quals, but I'm good, man. I've never been a better husband, father, human being, aviator in my entire life. So I'm good.
Did that lose you medical or anything like that?
No. Well, and you see, isn't that funny? So is the FAA going to have a problem with me not being an alcoholic anymore and being the best human I've ever been in my life? Do you want me to go back to being unhealed? I mean, this is all coming. So I've had, you know, people reach out like, hey, are you willing to testify? I'm like, yeah, man, of course. You know, what was it? 6-8 months ago, the Department of Justice and the FAA started talking like, wait a minute, there's 5,000 captains and first officers in this country who are getting disability benefits from the VA, but they didn't claim it on their class one medicals. So we're going after all these veterans. I'm like, oh my God, man. Talk about, I helped an F-16, American Airlines captain. He flew Vipers for 20 years in the Air Force. He's like, Wiz, I pay cash. I've been in therapy for 15 years and I pay cash because I don't want Uncle Sam finding out.
Yeah, all this stuff, the typical self-medicate, keep it off the books.
The last person you would talk to in your squadron about anything was the flight surgeon.
Yeah.
And he's the guy or the gal that's like, come talk to me about anything. We're not that dumb. So what do they want? So that's why I told you, being one of the first aviators, I'm like, I have no problem, man, sticking my head above the fence line. And we have helped, man, I forget the numbers, probably over 50 airline guys and gals to date that have done it under the radar and are completely healed human beings. But, you know, of course, there'll be ignorance to I'll come out of the closet a little bit, you know, being an adversary down on debt in Key West, I'd be drinking to 1 or 2 in the morning, you know, for the 6 o'clock brief. I mean, seriously.
Oh, yeah. That's culture, fighter pilot culture, man. It's like
exactly.
Work hard, play hard. You're on the booze all the time.
Exactly. So the FAA is going to have a problem with doing something like this once in your life over a weekend. It's not in your system. It's completely gone and you're healed. What type of perverse system? You know, and it's funny, Boo, when I'll ask a big audience, you know, giving a speech or something like that. I'm like, let me get a show of hand. You know, a lot of you flew here, right? Yeah. Okay. How many of you would rather your captain and first officer continue self-medicating, lying, or drinking and, you know, all sorts of stuff? Or would you rather them go take a week off in Costa Rica or Mexico and heal their trauma? Everybody in the room raises. So FAA, give me a call, man. I'd love to talk to you. And let's see what the flying public would prefer from their airline personnel. You know, and it's funny because, you know, my phone rang off the hook like, oh, my God, that jump seater on the whatever, you know, that was trying to pull up the fire handle. I took mushrooms a couple days ago. I haven't slept and my brain died.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anybody who knows anything about mushrooms, if that happened during the flight, he took them when he got on the plane. It's a 4-hour experience, if that. So, oh, I took him. And it's funny because the media never re-reported on it. His attorney's like, that mushroom thing. He was in his excuse matrix. He was grasping his straws. There was nothing in his system. That didn't happen. But again, you know, my phone's blowing up with ignorant people. I'm like, dude, seriously. So, but yeah, long answer, short question. I've never been the drinking. Everything is gone in my life. So if the FAA is going to have a problem with that, man, they got my number and my email.
But it sounds like that it's also that transition into elevated thinking, right? Out of the weeds now. And you can see that perspective and just see it for what it is, right? Stupid, you know, ridiculous laws, fear, lack of understanding, alternate agendas. And you're like, whatever. I can navigate life above all of that. I can literally soar above it.
Old me would be, no, man, yeah, I absolutely am. I'm up at a strategic level, man, not in the tactical weeds. And up here, it's a pretty good view. You know, I'll tell you this real quick. Walk in the halls of Congress, congressman who shall remain nameless behind closed doors. Wiz, you know, I love what you're doing, man, but, you know, you're going to have a problem with big pharma and the alcohol and tobacco lobbies. I'm like, seriously, dude? You're going to have a problem. What are you talking about, man? So, you know, that's kind of what we're up against, man. You know, the good news over the past couple of weeks was a company called Cybin and also MindMed with generalized anxiety disorder and major depression, 70% cured from major depression with just 2 16-milligram doses of psilocybin. If you're sitting in the CEO's office at Pfizer, Moderna, Eli Lilly, looking at these results, smoking your cigar with your feet on your desk, you got to get moving, man, because these things treat the what's wrong, not necessarily just papering over the top here. So, I mean, we've talked about that on a separate podcast. I'd be buying the public psychedelic stocks with both hands. And I'm torn to say this as me teaching people how to trade. I love it. Big pharma, come in with your big checkbook and scoop them all up. And then Wiz, as a human and a guy helping people heal, that's my worst nightmare. They're going to change a molecule, you know, call it ibogaine. And instead of 14 hours, it's a 40-minute journey and it's 20 grand. So I'm kind of torn about it a little bit, to be honest with you. But if it helps the world heal,
if it hits mainstream, that's what you want, right? You want it to be
a firm.
Anything mainstream comes at a cost, mate. Anything mainstream, someone with a big checkbook and a big fund somewhere is going to want to cash in. Hey, Wiz, mate, I got to shoot. That was an awesome podcast. I appreciate it. First time I've ever spoken about taking psychedelics to the fighter pilot, I have to say. I got a feeling that this podcast will do the rounds. And a lot of our folk are going to have a new perspective. A lot of guys, Army, Air Force, first responders, you know, with the work we do at Afterburner, we're becoming more and more entrenched in the first responder community as a service, you know, and it's, you see when you talk to people, what they've created to deal with it. It is not them that you're having a conversation with. It's the version of them they created to be able to endure that sort of life.
Hey, Bill, real quick. Could you imagine if our first responders or even a cop showing up to a call were kind of healed and not like a mess? Could you imagine if they were empathetic and full of compassion? Might be a different outcome in a lot of situations. So from my mouth to God's ears, hopefully, let's help our first responders as well. I agree.
Awesome, man. Thanks very much for coming to the podcast. Grateful for your time. And let's jag another one where we can go real deep on some of this stuff. Be awesome.
You bet, bro. Thanks for having me. Fight's on.
Thanks, man. Well, that wraps another episode of The Few, and I'd like to thank our partners, without whom this episode wouldn't be possible. Firstly, Ode Management, an organization that brings world-class speakers into your event or organization to make a profound impact on your people to deliver the results that you want. And Afterburner, real-life fighter pilots, a team of men and women who for the past 25 years have helped organizations surpass their expectations, learning the tips and tricks fighter pilots use to win 98% of the time. If you enjoyed the show, please show your support by subscribing to the podcast, The Few with Boom, or our YouTube channel. It's been an absolute pleasure sharing the stories of these remarkable people with you. I hope that helps you keep the dream alive, but more importantly, equips you with a few ideas of how to turn those dreams into reality to help you become one of the few too.